Welcome to Good Life. I'm Dean Wilson. So glad you joined us today. We have a special public servant with us today, Kevin Taylor. He's the fire chief here at the Montecito Fire District. He's got some amazing stories and insight. He's a great guy. Kevin Taylor, Good Life is next. Welcome to Good Life. I'm Dean Wilson. I'm so glad you're with us today. You can always check goodlifetelevision.org is where all the interviews are. So over the last year, we've had some incredible people, public servants, business people, entrepreneurs, young people, famous people, not famous people. We've kind of had the whole gamut, but they're all great people and they're great stories. And so I hope you'll go to goodlifetelevision.org. You can see the interviews. You can also see what we call power clips. So we take the full form interviews and we break them up into some of the most powerful moments in those interviews and some of the wisdom and lessons learned. And so the power clips are also there, goodlifetelevision.org. I'm really excited about my guest today. Kevin Taylor is with me. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Kevin was named the fire chief of the Montecito Fire Protection District. That's the name, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Yep. He was named the fire chief here where we are locally in the Santa Barbara area of California a little over a year ago, I guess.
Yeah. July 1st of 2019.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's been boring,
right? Nothing ever is boring in Montecito, right? The front country of Santa Barbara, the least boring place to work on the planet.
Isn't that true? I want to get to that, but I want to kind of start with kind of where you grew up and a little bit about yourself, your family.
Yeah, fantastic. Sort of it's my pleasure to share that. So I was born and raised in Paso Robles, California, back when they had a hospital at the War Memorial Hospital. And from there, I attended college at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo.
Okay.
And my third year, I ran out of money and I needed a summer job. And I became a seasonal firefighter for the state fire department. I was on track to be a veterinarian. That was my chosen career path, major in animal science. And that first fire season, it became my calling. And so after Cal Poly, I went to the fire academy, became a certified firefighter, then went to paramedic school, got my paramedic license, and then started taking fire department tests throughout California and Arizona. So this was in 1991. I was hired, believe it or not, by the Paso Robles Fire Department. In my hometown, I was the first career paid firefighter in the department.
And really?
I spent 25 years there, promoting up through the ranks to the position of battalion chief. While I was there, I completed a bachelor's degree in fire administration, master's degree in emergency management. And then in 2015, this wonderful opportunity at the Montecito Fire Protection District presented itself, and so I came to Montecito as the division chief operations. That's the number two person in the organization, and I served from 2015 until 2019 in that position, and then was fortunate enough to be selected by our board of directors to be the fire chief.
Wow.
So that's my personal history in a snapshot. I would be very remiss if I didn't mention two people, though, the most important people in my life, and that's my wife, Jo, who was an emergency room nurse. We've been married for 29 years.
Wow.
And then my son, Jake, who's a 23-year-old school teacher at a local Catholic school.
Wow. Joe and Jake.
Joe and Jake.
How great.
Yeah, it's a J theme.
Yeah, you got all J's.
Yeah, all J's.
What is it? Tell us a little bit about, you got your master's in emergency management.
Right.
Which I think, what is that like? What is that study course?
Yeah,
like?
So it's actually kind of a new course of study after September 11th. So when the Department of Homeland Security was created, if you recall, President Bush had several presidential declarations that created new departments and kind of reorganized the federal government to meet the terrorism threat. One of the things that he did internally on the domestic side was increase the preparation of local governments to respond to these catastrophic events.
Okay.
Pretty much modeled after California's system. And so the Masters of Emergency Management focused on how local, state, and federal government interacts together during large disasters. So you can imagine, spend a lot of time studying things like Hurricane Katrina, the nuclear disasters in Japan as a result of the tsunamis.
Right.
A lot of stuff on cyber terrorism and then just general terrorism. Very, very interesting course of study. Very glad that I chose that as opposed to like public administration or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In one sense, it's tough stuff to have to learn about. I mean, but you all are the ones who respond.
Yeah, it's super important. And it really, I have to tell you, it paid off during the Thomas Fire and the debris flow, right? Because you know how to interact in the various levels of government to help get your community what you need. The most important thing, you know, we exist to serve the community, the Montecito Fire Protection District. That's the only reason that we're here, is to serve our community.
Right.
When we have an event that size, obviously that's well beyond the scope of our ability to handle by ourselves.
Right.
And so we had help from both regional, state, and federal government partners involved in that, which was, you know, we would not have been successful without that. So it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was here the other day. We've had a couple different public servants. We had the chief of police, and we had Sam Dudley.
Yeah.
Locally here.
Of course. Yeah. Know Sam well.
Yeah. We were talking a lot with both of them, you know, about public service and what I call the nobility of this calling. You said you had a calling, which I think is, I kind of think that's maybe the only way you survive in your business is if you have a calling, because it's, you guys are responding to the most difficult situations that happen in our society. I mean, nobody calls you with good news.
Nope.
It's a problem. It's a crisis. It's a disaster. So I have two questions. One is, what's that like? I mean, in terms of being in a profession where you wake up every morning and you just don't know what you might be facing. And then number two, what would you say to young people who might consider this noble profession?
Yeah, both great questions. I guess most importantly, that you wake up each morning not knowing what you're going to face. That's part of the draw of the job.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you have all this training, education, and experience
right.
that is locked and loaded, ready to be applied to whatever situation presents itself. Mm-hmm. And that's incredibly challenging, right? I always describe the firefighters as coiled springs.
Right.
Right? They're coiled, they're ready to be released to jump into action to solve that person's problem. When we interact with community members, it's their worst day.
Right.
Right. They've called us because they're having their worst day, and it's our job to go respond and make that day just a little bit better.
Mm.
That might be by our paramedics performing some life-saving treatment on a person. Maybe there's a fire in the house and they're going to extinguish it, or a wildland fire and they're going to protect somebody's home. But it could be something as simple as my carbon monoxide detector keeps going off
mm-hmm.
and I have a headache.
Right,
and they actually do have a carbon monoxide exposure. So the wide range of emergencies that that we respond to really, really, I think, is a big draw of why people get into the business.
Hmm.
And each time that they respond to that, there's a person involved.
Yeah.
Right? So it's people.
Right.
And there is no, in my mind, there's nothing better that we can do for each other than to help each other.
Yeah.
Right? It's all about, we're all in That's this right. together, right?
Yeah.
None of us survive any of this thing called life on
right.
our own.
Right.
So that's what I would say to the younger generation is, think of all the things that you've accomplished, or at least tried to accomplish in your life, and look around and see who helped you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That person is just like a firefighter.
Yeah.
They existed to help you just get one little rung higher or a little bit further along.
Right.
Or they were interested in your success, because none of us do any of this alone.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. When I, you know, and I think everybody feels this way, but when you're in a crisis and you've, you know, somebody stops breathing, some, you know, and you guys walk in the door, it's like, I don't know how to describe it. It's like superheroes or something. I mean, I know you're people, but I mean, there's something so just awesome about that you all exist, you
right.
know, that on my worst day, that you guys are going to walk in the door and save the day. I mean, you say make it a little bit better. That's true. But sometimes you make it a lot better. I mean, right. You save somebody's life. You save somebody's house. I mean, it's big stuff.
It's big and it's meaningful. It's also an awesome responsibility.
Right.
Right? Imagine the firefighters sitting at the fire station right now. They're involved in, well, it's lunchtime, but as soon as lunch is finished, they have a two-hour training event. And they're preparing for one of the 100,000 different things that they may face during their shift, right? So imagine that newer firefighter who's been on the job, say, 2 years, the things that must be going through his head. I can tell you, when I think back in my career,
yeah,
when I'm sitting there at that training event going, I wonder when the next time I will be called upon, or we as our team will be called upon, to actually perform this task. Because it's not pass fail. It has to be 100% every time, right? We don't grade on a bell curve.
Right.
It's not, you can't kind of help somebody start breathing again.
Right.
You have to get 100 on that
test,
right? We used to joke in paramedic school, the passing grade was 95 or higher on all the written tests, right? And so it was 95 stay alive, 94 out the door. But when you sit and think about that for a second, the paramedic that's helping you, you want them to have that 100% of the knowledge, right?
Yeah.
Not 95%.
Right.
So that's kind of the level of expectation. It's, hey, we can always get better. We can always do a better job for the community member that needs our help.
So good.
Yeah.
And it is such a noble profession. I hope young people are watching, consider this, because it seems like everybody I talk to in your profession or law enforcement, when it is their calling, it's a rewarding deal.
Yeah, you mentioned I assume that it was Lori Lunhow that you had on the show, the police chief. What a wonderful human being, right?
Yeah, yeah.
She exists only to serve others.
Yeah.
Only. That is absolutely her attitude and her position in life.
Yeah.
Such a, I love interacting with her because she's very, very motivating.
She is.
Reminds me why I'm in public service.
Yeah, we had a great time with her.
She's fantastic.
I want to get to the Montecito mudslides in a second, but
sure.
But before that, and we did talk about this with I think with Laurie as well. But how do you deal with and how do you help your team, the people that you're charged with? In terms of taking this stuff home, the stuff you see, the trauma, the death, how do you deal with that emotionally? And how do you help your people do that?
So I guess I'll start by saying a lot better and more effectively than we used to. So when I started on this job, the common message was, that's what we do, suck it up, get back on the engine, and get ready for the next emergency. Right? Hey, and if you can't take it, you're not cut out for this profession. You should start looking for something else. Fortunately, probably in the last decade or so, there's been an awakening in our profession and law enforcement kind of side by side in, hey, this is a very important member of our team. Every member of our team is equally important, and we need to develop a support system so that when we have a problem, and by the way, the data says 66% of our employees are going to have a problem as a result of everything that you just described, we need to have a mechanism in place to help them. So locally, we have something called At Ease. I'm sure Lori talked about that. That's this wonderful program that we all contribute to, started at Santa Barbara Police Department, that allows for confidential contact between the employee and a mental health professional. So that's the first thing that we've started to participate in. Secondly, and equally important, we have something called a peer support team. So these are six, in our department, there are six of them. We have 47 members total. Six of them have received extra training that provides them with the tools necessary to, on a peer-to-peer basis, help our firefighters that are struggling mentally or spiritually. And we've invested an incredible amount of treasure into that program because it's incredibly important.
Wow.
If you can imagine all those firefighters were on duty during the Thomas Fire and the debris flow. Everybody at our department worked something like 72 days in a row. And one of the things that helped get us through that that helped keep us all together and focused on serving the community were those two programs.
Wow.
It's absolutely critical to our success to continue to do those. So At Ease and Peer Support. Recently, we've enhanced the Peer Support program where there is a single individual that coordinates all of the fire department's peer support programs, and that's allowed us to share our peer support counselors amongst each other.
Huh.
So if, for example, one of our firefighters feels that he might be stigmatized if he talks to one of our peer support people, he can actually reach out to somebody from the county fire department or the city fire department, or let's say he lives in Santa Maria, he can visit, or she can visit with somebody from Santa Maria Fire.
Huh.
So we're trying to build all these layers.
Yeah.
To keep our firefighters, I have this saying that I repeat ad nauseum, right? The folks that I work with get sick of hearing it, but when we hire our firefighters, we go to great expense to make sure that they're 100% physically intact, mentally intact, psychologically through a psychological exam, and then of course spiritually through our interview process. And then we expect them to work at the job for 30 years. That's the length of a firefighter's career. Law enforcement is the same, 30 years. And the commitment that we make to them when we hire them is that when they leave, we're going to do everything within our power that they leave 100% mentally, physically, and spiritually intact. Mm. The same way that they came.
Mm. Wow.
So, yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
So, and Addie, I'm a friend of Mike McGurr, so I know
all about Addie. Oh, perfect. You're Addie's. That guy's the...
The great... Mike
oh
Mirror,
my gosh, that you would think that would do justice, but it's so much more, right?
It's incredible.
The guy is absolutely amazing.
Amazing human being.
Things that he's done for our communities.
Yeah, I love that.
Wow.
Love that guy.
Yep.
But I hadn't heard about the peer-to-peer, so that's really neat.
Yeah.
And that's relatively new?
It is. It's about a year old, and okay. We're super fortunate. There's a gentleman named Tony Pagetti, who's a retired captain from the Santa Barbara City Fire Department.
Huh.
He's also the operations director for At Ease, kind of attached at the hip with Mike.
Okay.
Who's our peer support coordinator. So the Santa Barbara County Fire Chiefs Association actually hired him to do that job. And
okay.
He's doing a wonderful job.
Wonderful.
And like
wow.
Sam, he has an emotional support dog
yes.
also. He has donuts.
I met Rhonda.
Yeah.
She was on that couch.
Yeah.
She didn't
so
say a lot.
Rhonda and donuts are the two emotional. I'm surprised she didn't say a
she
lot.
She didn't say much. I was asking her questions.
It wouldn't answer.
Yeah. But she was real relaxed.
Oh, yeah.
Rhonda.
Yeah.
And I follow her on Instagram now.
Of course.
So, let's go back to the Montecito mudslides.
Sure.
you, when you came to Montecito, so on January 9, 2018,
yeah.
you were one of the unified commanders.
I was.
At the branch where you're now chief.
Yeah.
Walk us through the night, the morning, the day, and kind of what happened.
You got it. Can I go all the way back to December 16th?
Yes, please.
So as you yeah. know, the Thomas Fire at the time, the largest fire in the history of California, a very late season fire that burned incredibly intense, you know, made a run from Santa Paula to the coast in an evening, and then kind of marched its way up the front country towards Montecito. On December 16th at about 4 in the morning, there was a sundowner event after 14 days of red flag fire conditions that blew the fire into our community, into Montecito proper. Because there were no other fires burning, we had 300 fire engines deployed in this little community. They
wow.
were able to save almost every home. Only 7 homes were lost during the Thomas
wow.
Fire, which is an incredible,
yeah.
incredible effort, right? We were so incredibly proud of all of our mutual aid partners. But we very quickly realized, matter of fact, Sunday morning, that while we had had great success in protecting the community from the fire threat, we were at great risk for debris flow, right? In other
so
words,
you knew that.
We knew that, yeah. And the challenge when you have the steep topography that we have and then the alluvial plain that creates these beautiful ocean views, right, is that was formed. The way that it got to be that way is throughout the eons there have been debris flows, and they always follow fires, obviously. So we had our very first planning meeting on December 17th. very first staff meeting on the topic the day after Christmas at 0800. I wasn't the most popular guy because most staff people take the day after Christmas off, but a very engaged group, and we started planning for how we would protect the community from a debris flow. We came to the realization very quickly that that's not a thing. There is no way to protect, short of an LA River solution, there is no way in 2 weeks to protect a community from a debris flow. So we started doing training. We learned all about debris flows. We learned about the weather that causes them. We became very close partners and confidants with the National Weather Service, with geologists, with debris flow scientists, and thankfully, lo and behold, we spent all that time, energy, and effort to prepare because about while the Thomas Fire was still burning before it was under control, 4 days before the debris flow, there was that ominous weather forecast that said, you're going to get this, and here's what it's probably going to cause.
What was the forecast?
The forecast was, it's where a train of storms comes through. They have a Pineapple Express.
Oh, okay.
So it's a train of storms that come through, gathers moisture in the channel, so from the islands to the mainland, and then has high-intensity, short-duration rainfall. And high-intensity, short-duration rainfall is the triggering event for a debris flow. So at any rate, pre-debris flow, we activated our incident management team. I was one of the incident commanders of that, and we brought about 200 firefighters on duty. So local firefighters, we brought water rescue people up from Long Beach, people so from throughout the state, they were here on the 8th.
On the 8th.
Yeah, and so they spent the time in the community on the 8th, learning where the risk areas were and those sorts of things. So that if something happened, they could be very quickly deployed. And as we all know, January 9th, I forget, 320 or something along those lines, there was a cell that came through the front country and sat right below the Camino Cielo and dropped 0.9 inches in 5 minutes and caused that catastrophic event that unfortunately devastated our community and took with it 23 of our most prized possessions, right? The firefighters that were on duty, the rescuers that were on duty, they were immediately deployed. On the 9th, there was a little over 800 contact rescues, about 100 helicopter rescues, and I guess the rest is kind of history. Yeah, very difficult day.
Where were you?
Well, I was at the incident command post. So we had set up the incident command post at Earl Warren Showgrounds. And it was myself, there was an operations section chief there and a liaison and the plan section chief. And so in incident management, you have a plan for what you're doing now, and then you have a plan to either send all of those guys home. It's called the demobilization plan. So that means nothing happened, right? And they can go home. But you also have a plan for how you will reinforce that response if the worst case happens. And so when the worst case occurred, that order was placed, and we ended up with about somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,900 rescuers in the community for about 2 weeks.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So that was the worst case.
That was absolutely the worst case. 9/10 of an inch in 5 minutes. Scientists, there, a lot of work has been done to try to quantify the amount of material that came through the community. Some scientists estimate 1.5 million cubic yards, others 3 million cubic yards. When you start talking those numbers, up to, I want to say 17 feet deep and a speed of somewhere between 25 and 45 miles an hour.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That
so
is
devastating.
Amazing. Is it, I mean, you're the fire chief in Montecito, California. It's a challenging place. I mean, with the, I mean, you know, going back to 2008, the fire, and then, you know, it seems like now every year there's an issue or a threat. Or you know, last year, I think Goleta, there was something coming.
That's right.
Is this a significantly more challenging place than where you spent 25 years? Or is it just different?
It's just different. So each community or jurisdiction has its own challenges. So in Paso Robles, we had high-density housing that that had frequent fires. So there's a significant life risk in that, right? But it's just one building that's densely right. packed. In Montecito, we have this beautiful front country, right, where you go from sea level to 3,800 feet in 4 miles. And in the middle of it is our gorgeous community that's just layered in this kind of flat area that has perfect weather, right? The right. American Riviera, it's right. we only have one season, it's beautiful.
Right.
But there are these moments, right? Because we also have sundowner winds,
right.
which means like in 2008 and 2009 and that we're at risk for these substantial fires,
yeah.
right? That a very small fire just runs to the ocean pushed by a 70 mile an hour wind. So that's a big deal, right. right? And then our second hazard is because of the steepness of our topography and the way that the mountains lay, when that fire occurs shortly after it, there's going to be a flood. It might not be like the 1-9 event, but there's for sure going to be a flood. And it's going to include rocks and boulders and cobble, and it may stay in its conveyance method, the little riverbed, or it may come out. So that's another significant challenge. And then our rain in Montecito, because of the effect of the channel and the orographic pressure that the mountains put on the clouds as they pass over, creates fairly high intensity rainstorms. So even if we don't have a fire, our community has fairly significant flood risk.
Right.
Not debris flow risk, but flood
risk.
Just
regular flooding.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah
right.
That's yep, so those three things are challenging. We haven't talked about earthquakes, and we haven't talked about major hazardous materials incidents on the rail or the freeway that runs through. So you're right, there are a lot of risks.
You have your hands full.
Well, so we, right?
You're right,
so
we.
Like I said in the beginning,
it's not all your responsibility.
Well, no, so at the end of the day, I'm responsible, right? And I absolutely love that responsibility, and I take responsibility, all those things, but we have this wonderful team.
Yeah.
Right? Cuz none of us can do any of this alone. So those 47 members, and then we have these really great partners called Carpinteria Summerlin Fire District and Santa Barbara City Fire Department and Santa Barbara County Fire Department that are right on our borders that come and help.
Yeah.
And then we have this awesome community that supports us to have the tools and equipment that we need to actually be able to do the job.
Right.
So,
and things well, like at ease. And,
precisely you know, the way to take equipment. Care of our firefighters. Yeah. Yeah, that's so while beautiful. We have these awesome risks, we also are very well prepared to address them.
Yeah, that's so good.
Yeah,
okay,
we're fortunate.
I think the theme of this program is together. We're all in this together. I heard you say it several times.
Yeah.
We're not alone, which is a great truth. And you know, unfortunately, sometimes it's in the worst moments, in the worst crises, where we realize we're all human beings again, and we need each other. You know, we are in this together. Hopefully we can keep that going even when there's not a crisis.
Right.
But thank you for all you do. We're out of time, but I
yeah, no worries.
This is amazing.
Yeah,
amazing.
Thanks for having me. It's my pleasure to visit with you.
Yeah, and thanks for your service. We'll see you next time.